It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 349. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Buddy, welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me suggestions for future show topics or any tech question. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message. The phone number is 240-949-2450. And that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. I have three voicemails that we're going to get to later in the show. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show, and send me a friend request on Facebook, facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. A few announcements for tonight and a couple quick comments. I want to thank everybody who sent me such great kind words and feedback from my two talks last weekend, Friday night at the Brookdale PC Users Group and the Philadelphia Area Computer Society on Saturday. I had a great time, great turnout. Everybody seemed to enjoy my talk and sent me lots of great emails, and I thank you so very much and welcome. If you're a new listener, check out the site at miketechshow.com and go to the wiki, and that's mtswiki.com, where you can find links to all of my archives and the older shows, and you can go back because I have lots of great topics and some of the things that I mentioned in the discussions during during my talk. And you'll be happy to know that I'm planning a second discussion dedicated to backups. And I'm going to put a great presentation together on doing backups. And I intend to go on the lecture circuit again in 6 months or more, where you could see me again. And I will let you know when I'm going to be and where I'm going to be appearing. So I've already gotten invites to come back to the Princeton Users Group meeting and over the summer. So I'll plan on hearing me talk about backups. I'm going to have a link in the show notes. If you are in or near Pittsburgh the first weekend of June, we are going to have a Mike Tech Show meetup. Citizen X has been kind enough to not only set up a Facebook page, the URL is very easy, and this is where we're coordinating the meetup, and it's tinyurl.com/MTS-meetup, one word, MTS-MEETUP. There you will find the details where my sons and I will be coming up on Friday, and that's June 3rd, and we're going to be going to the Phillies games Saturday night and Sunday afternoon, but Saturday afternoon, we're going to have a meetup. The location is to be determined. We're working the details out. It started out with me mentioning that I'm going to be going to some Phillies games up in Pittsburgh. And three people in the chat that night, when I mentioned it in a post show of the Mike Tech Show, are from Pittsburgh and said, we got to get together. Then it's kind of morphed into people traveling from a lot of places coming in just for the meetup. So we're going to do this right and we're going to plan it out. And I'll have details on the locations. But the best thing to do is to go to that URL on Facebook, because that's where we're going to manage all of the details and the times and the places. I think it's early enough where if you are in driving distance or you can get there, it'll be a lot of fun. For me, it's a five-hour drive from Philadelphia, and I'm definitely staying the entire weekend, and we'll be driving home Sunday night. So we're going to be getting in Friday afternoon, my son Michael Jr. and my son Ryan and myself. So looking forward to meeting up. It's the first Mike Tech Show meetup. Of course, it's not in Philadelphia, right? But we're going to have a lot of fun. Hopefully, you can join us. First up on the agenda here, my iPad 2, which I received last week, the first couple days, I started experiencing drops from my wireless network. Now, I have a Wi-Fi only iPad 2, and I thought there might be a problem. So I started researching online. I did a lot of reading of the forums, and I found out that someone who was having the problem communicating the same way with the router, and this was very common, a lot of people trying to communicate via N, I found that users trying to communicate with an N wireless router, it was dropping, and they turned off mixed mode on the router. So the router could do N and it could do G. They turned off mixed mode and it started working. Well, that got me thinking. I am a G and everybody in the house is G. My wireless setting on my Verizon wireless router has mixed mode on by default where you could have B and G. And I noticed, I'm like, well, no one in the house has B, so why don't I just make it G only? The minute I did that, I have never dropped a signal yet. And I did that a week ago. Now, remember, the first couple days, I would drop after a couple minutes, and I have to go reestablish the connection to the router. Reestablish. And it became almost unusable using my iPad. Taking off mixed mode solved the problem. Now, if you're in a house that needs N and G, you got a problem. So you got to decide, are you going to just be N or are you just going to be G? Now, of course, you want to take advantage of everything. Now, my solution, what I'm going to do is add, when I want to decide to go N, I will add another access point and just have it as N. So you could really then, if you're G only, you're on one Wi-Fi router. If you're N only, you're on another one. So now you can maintain both. That's an expensive solution, but it works. Now, is that the fault of the wireless within the Apple chipset and what they're doing with the iPad 2? This was a problem, it seems, with the iPad 1 also. So as I was going through these threads, this seemed to be a common problem, and the solution seemed to be just turn off the mixed mode. Just stay with one designation for your wireless. So I wanted to pass along this tip because it really solved my problem. Take a look at your wireless. If you don't need mixed mode, well, why have it? Turn it off. If you're all G in your house, which is predominantly the what's out there for wireless, yes, the products now are supporting N, but if you're mostly G, turn it off. If you have all new wireless products and they're N only, make it N only. You're probably going to get better performance anyway. Not a bad idea. Not sure where the problem lies. Part, is it the router? Is it Apple? Is it, but at least we have a clear solution for the drops. So if you know anyone that's running into that problem, now you know the tip to give them for their wireless network. Two iPad 2 apps that I believe are must-haves. One, the app is Air Display. An incredible little app that adds a second monitor, or in my case, a third monitor, to your setup, whether you have Windows or Mac OS X, you buy one app for your iPad, and then you have a free client to download for Windows or Mac, and it requires a reboot, and I have tested it on both platforms, and it works flawlessly. What I really like is adding the iPad 2 as a third monitor to the right of my screens, and I can drag an app across the screens onto the iPad, and now I have a touch screen for that Windows app. So I could drag my Outlook client all the way over and just have email on my one display of the iPad. It just adds functionality that I hadn't planned on. The next app is called Flipboard, and the links will be in the show notes. Flipboard is free. It is absolutely required if you are using any social media. It is an aggregator of RSS feeds, news feeds, social media feeds, and it presents all of those feeds in a magazine, newspaper-like presentation on your iPad, where, for example, yesterday, when I was looking at my Twitter feed through Flipboard, there was a lot of links and mentions of Elizabeth Taylor passing away. So my display looked like literally an Elizabeth Taylor magazine. I mean, there was a picture organized with an article. So your tweet with whatever link you're mentioning, it brings that link, whether it's a photo or a portion of the article, and it brings it and massages it on the display in such a way that it presents it in a very organized, interesting fashion. It's another look into your social media feed. If you're looking at Facebook, your Facebook feeds, or your Twitter feed, very interesting. You can also subscribe to other news feeds like CNN, Sports Illustrated. It was very interesting. You can add Google Reader as one of the feeds if you so desire. I haven't even played with some of my RSS feeds, and something that you should absolutely download if you are an iPad owner. And I have to thank Mark, who's me, Claudius, in the chat. He emailed me last night and put me onto that app and said, "Mike, you got to download it." And I went right to the App Store late last night, downloaded it, and man, that kept me up a couple extra hours. Instead of sleeping, I was playing with the apps. So very, very nice, and I wanted to pass that on. Another link I have. This link was sent in by Jim, and it's a teardown of the iPad 2. It's literally a slideshow of taking apart each piece of the iPad 2. So if you want to see how it's made and get into the gory details of the blood and guts of the iPad 2, well, this is a great slideshow. Want to turn and talk about my domain transfer that happened about a month ago, and I've been meaning to talk about this. I have a link to the description of the steps that it takes to transfer your domain. And this is from the GoDaddy support forums, and it's what GoDaddy emailed me this link as I was entering into the process of transferring my domain. Now, I talked about this a while back. One of the things you have to do is make sure all of the administrative info is correct. So I did that. Then you have to purchase the transfer. Did that. Then you have to actually initiate and begin the transfer process. And for this example, I used GoDaddy, and you go into your domain manager, you go to domains, and then you select pending transfer. Now, one of the things after you transfer, you have to contact your domain hosting provider, the person, the place where that you purchased that domain. In my case, it was Brinkster, and I had to get an authorization code. They put up a little resistance, but then they gave me the code. Once I got the code, I entered that in on GoDaddy at the pending transfer, and once I entered that code, within a couple hours, I had my domain over at GoDaddy. It was painless, it was fast, and there was no interruption except for the initial forwarding that I've been doing now. Everything looks the same. You're still being forwarded to MikeNation.net. One of the things I have to do, I haven't figured this out yet, and I've had a couple suggestions. How do I make two domains authenticate at the same place? So if you type MikeTechShow.com, it really doesn't forward. It takes you to the same hosting that MikeNation.net takes you. I have to work that out. Right now, it feels very, very good that I have control over my own domain. By doing that, I immediately set up Google Apps for my email for Mike at MikeTechShow.com. And now that works. So anybody who's emailing Mike at MikeTechShow.com, I'm getting that email. There was a long period of time where that email went into limbo while I was doing the forwarding from Brinkster to GoDaddy. So don't be afraid of the process. Review the link that I have in the show notes so you are fully prepared as you go through the domain transfer. And I took my time. I thought everything out. I made sure that I had everything in place as I methodically went through this process because I didn't want Mike Tech Show to be off the air for any amount of time. And if you plan this right, you can do it. The only issue that I guess some people have, where I first started forwarding everything to another domain name, I needed to practice with WordPress because my old display, my old website was all based on Blogger, and I had never tried it out on WordPress and the conversion. So I had a whole lot of things going on, not just the domain changing, but I literally, if you remember a little less than a year ago, I actually moved my domain over to WordPress and I needed a playground to work out that conversion. So I had lots of things happening. So it's finally done. Hopefully somebody will learn something from that process. I have a utility that I have to share with you. It is called TFC for Temp File Cleaner. I got an email last week in the middle of the night from my friend Carrie Holzman, and he was raving about this utility. He just loved it. You know, where has it been his whole life? And I figured I got to share that. A way to easily clean up all of the temp files from your system. Please be careful. Make sure you set a system restore point before you do this. Make sure there are no apps running because I tend to not want to delete all of the temp files, but you just got to be careful of what's running. Don't ever run this on a server. Make sure you use good sense. As a matter of fact, I'm going to share a quick story. My presentation last week, at one of my presentations, one of the people that was in the audience called me on my business line because I handed out business cards to people who wanted them. And they were trying to run the Glary utilities that I had mentioned and discussed. And this person, after a couple minutes of talking to them, clearly should not have been handed such a utility. And this is where we have to be very careful. And I have to be careful of my audience, and a lot of times I'm going to have a mixed audience and a mixed level of computer experience where I'm going to be hitting all levels. And I need to add some words of caution before I just present a utility. And this is one of them. You got to be careful. You have to use common sense. And use this rule of thumb. If things are working perfectly, if you're happy with your system and you're happy with your performance, leave it alone. Don't do anything. Be happy. Just make sure you're backing everything up. There's a point to where you can do harm if you execute some of this incorrectly. So not only did this person not download the right utility, I have no idea what utility they downloaded. They went to the wrong site, and who knows where they were led by typing in the wrong place and then downloading the wrong utility and then called me to talk. I talked them out of it. I said, exit out of it. I said, is your system running fine? Yes. Are you happy with everything the way it's running? Yes. Then leave it alone. And that was my advice. Just keep that in the back of your mind. Now, for everyone who's exploring and, you know, we want to be on the bleeding edge and we want to tweak everything to the nth degree and fine. But if we know what we're doing, we know how to back it out, and we have good backups, then go forth, plunge ahead, and play with these programs. One caveat, and one thing I always mention, and I mentioned this one Saturday, create a sandbox with some of this stuff. You know, I throw a lot at you week after week on all these utilities. Download VMware Server. It's free. Go to VMware.com. Install XP virtually and start playing with these utilities in a sandbox where you can do no harm. Who cares if you screw it up? That's a great way to play virtually with your system. Create a virtual sandbox for the operating system, and you can play with a lot of these utilities and see what it does. How about some voicemails here?
Hey, Mike, Kevin with the Computer Doctor here, Richmond, Virginia. Hey, just got done listening to your latest show where one of the listeners asked about some way to auto patch, and of course you mentioned auto patcher, and you also mentioned how the chat room was talking about WSUS, and I think what the chat room was probably talking about is a program that will capture Windows updates for essentially all versions that you want to download, that you can then capture those updates and store them onto like an external hard drive or something along those lines. There was a recent Podnut episode, I think it was either 56 or 57, where one of Steve's guests also mentioned this and talked about it in great detail and spoke very, very highly of it. I'll be honest, I have not used it yet, but I believe that's what the chat room was talking about. And that way you can, of course, essentially carry around all the updates with you and apply them through this WSUS. I believe it's also a portable program. So take a look at that. That might be a great benefit to you, Mike. And then also I'd like to give a big mention to the Podnuts Pro series. It's a semi-new Podnuts Pro series about, of course, getting into the business support world, computer consulting. It started, I believe, in fall of last year. It's a fantastic series. Gives a great deal of good information if you're trying to get into the business computer consulting world. So thanks again, as always, Mike, for a great show. Bye.
Thank you very much. In the show notes will be download.wsusoffline.net, which is a utility to do exactly what he mentioned. I have not played with it, but it's something that I absolutely will be putting together, because one of the time-consuming tasks after you reinstall an operating system is the pain of all of the Windows updates. And we definitely want to make that an easy chore. Check this out for the WSUS Offline Updater and give that a try. And it's something that I am absolutely going to be playing with and putting that together and testing it out. So great recommendation. I know Steve and I have not gotten together. He's asked me on a couple occasions to appear on Podnuts Pro. I have to make time, and I promise I will do that. Yes, I agree. That is a great series, a great podcast. Give a listen to this.
Yeah, this is Brad. I just want to back up what everybody's talking about on the recovering those files. On shadow copy, he has to make sure that he copies the previous versions to a new location. If he does not, then when you restore to previous versions, the previous ones may come back, but the new ones will go away since they have the same file name. So he's got to make sure that shadow copy copies or restores those previous versions to a different location on his drive. But that hopefully should work. Thanks. Bye.
That is a follow-up to the listener who overwrote his pictures and he was using Windows Vista and we're trying to help him with shadow copy to possibly retrieve them. So that was what that follow-up was for. Thank you very much for that, Brad. Here is a voicemail.
Hello, Mike. Patrick at Springfield, Missouri. A few weeks ago, you were talking about, the advantages of Outlook and I don't know if you've noticed, but maybe some of the other listeners, this Microsoft is offering a free email program, and it's not Outlook Express. It's Windows Live Mail. If you Google Windows Live Mail, the first answer will be the website for that. But when you download Windows Live, you can end up with several different programs, but you can uncheck them all except for Windows Live Mail if you wish. And the advantage to this is that Windows Live Mail includes the monthly Microsoft spam filter, which I've had outstanding success with in Outlook, both Outlook Enterprise and freestanding. It does an outstanding job of keeping the junk email out of my inbox. And don't have to train it like you do Thunderbird. So, take a look at that. I think you'll find it's very helpful. I've upgraded some of my Vista customers to that, and also some of the Windows 7 customers. I think it comes with Windows 7 already, but most of them don't even know it's on there until I get it set up for them. Well, that's all I had. Keep up the great work. Enjoyed listening to you for, what's it been, about 5 years now. Take care. Bye.
Thank you very much for that. Now, what he's referencing is Windows Live Essentials 2011. Link will be in the show notes. It is free, and you get Messenger, Photo Gallery, Movie Maker, Windows Live Mesh. You get Writer, where you can easily update your blogs. Very, very nice. You get Family Safety, Mail, which is the new replacement to Outlook Express. You get Messenger Companion, Bing Bar. Well, you know what? I don't like the Bing Bar. You get Microsoft Silverlight, and you get an Outlook Connector Pack. All of this is free, and it's a separate download when you get your new Windows 7 operating system. Now, it may already be on your computer. I noticed on certain Dell installs, maybe it's all of them, I noticed Windows Live Essential is installed. If it's not, you can go to Microsoft's site and download it, or you can just download, instead of the entire suite, just the programs that you want. Now, since I use Outlook all the time, I have no interest in Windows Live Mail, but if you don't have Outlook and you don't want to go to Thunderbird, this is a good option. You might want to check that out as we talk about different email clients. Why not? It's free, and it's a lot better than just plain old Outlook Express. They beefed it up a bit. Thank you for that recommendation. We talked about this a long time ago in the past Mike Tech Show, but some of these things, they need to be mentioned again to just revitalize this, because you need these options to be armed with recommendations for your clients, your friends, anybody that you run into. You may not need them, but it's good to know to be able to recommend solutions like this. Let's get to some email here. This is an SSD boot issue, and this is from Jason. And Jason, from my old stomping ground where I used to visit on many corporate trips to Rancho Cordova, California. So I normally don't mention the location, but I am very familiar with that city. I have a Dell XPS 420 with the latest BIOS date, 2008. I installed an OCZ Vortex 2 120 gig drive. The drive is not recognized from cold boots. Newegg will not refund me for the drive. I'm shocked at that. And from what I can find on forums in Dell and OCZ, no known fix other than turning off the fast boot. This works, but the boot takes forever. And the purpose of the SSD is fast boots. Any help would be appreciated. I will not be shopping at Newegg, so you will get even more purchases from your Amazon link. Thanks for all you do. Well, first, thank you, and thank you for mentioning my Amazon link. And by the way, if you go to miketechshow.com, you're going to see a link on the left-hand side to Amazon. Please click on that for any of your purchases, because it helps support the show. Things have been slow this month. Boy, we wanted to match what happened last month, so we need you to definitely pick up the pace and continue to use it and share that link. I really could use your help with using that Amazon link. Back to Jason's problem. Jason, you did not mention if you called the drive manufacturer, the OCZ Vortex manufacturer. Call them. I cannot believe they're going to leave you hanging on a new purchase where they know it doesn't work on Fastboot. They got to be able to help you. And I'm shocked that Newegg is not helping you. I would like you to call Newegg again. Now, first off, how old is this? How long are we talking about? Hopefully we're talking within the 30 days that you've purchased this. I want you to call Newegg back. I want you to ask for names. And I want to know their names, whoever you're talking to, where they won't honor a return for something that is not working properly. I have never known Newegg to do that. And if they are, I want you to escalate it, and I want you to ask for their manager. And I want you to escalate this process. And I also want you to call the manufacturer. I find it hard to believe that a new SSD drive, and for the money that you put out for that drive, I know they're not cheap, cannot believe Newegg or the manufacturer would not honor a return, a replacement drive, a way to have that fixed. If it's true, then I will hang them out there with you and send me more details. I will do that. Thanks for sharing that and keep me posted. I want to know if you need help trying to get them to do the return. I will call them out like I am right now. Hopefully someone's listening, or this will get back to Newegg. They'll make it right. If anybody is listening, hears this, contact me and I will put you in touch with this listener, and you can email me miketechshow@gmail.com. We're going to have a watchdog section of the show, and I don't mind doing that. We want to make it right, and that's all we ask. Everybody honor the warranty. Do what you say. You say something, you state something, we want you to stand behind it. That's all we're asking. We're not asking for more than that. We're just asking you to honor what is stated. This is I Hate Printer Problems, and this is Andy responding to the printer problem that I had with a client who, by the way, fixed his problem, and it was an Office 2007 Service Pack update. It was Service Pack 2 that was added to the Office setup that now stopped Excel from blowing up when he was printing to the Dell printer. So I wanted to add that. Mike, I think it's episode 348 where your client's Excel crashes when printing to the Dell printer from Windows 7. You said they can print to other printers okay, just not that one printer. You also said other users can print from XP to the Dell printer with no problems. I forgot if you said what else you tried. First of all, I love printer problems. I hope I can help. There is a printer forum on Yahoo called Printer Support. I have been a member of this group for years. It's a great resource. Here's the link. Not only did he post my problem, he sent me responses for things to try. Great forum. Secondly, did you try a new printer driver? Yes, we did. I know that's basic, but I don't remember you saying you tried it. What happens if you try a different driver, perhaps PostScript versus PCL? Andy, that was exactly what I was going to try had this not gotten fixed by doing the update, because what I wanted to do, right, that was the next step, which was they're all printing PCL, and I was going to try the latest PostScript driver as a possibility for solving this problem. So your thought process is right there with me. Or even a different Dell model driver. This would be for diagnostic purposes. So if the print came out looking funky, it would be okay. It could prove whether it's the driver is involved. Great idea. What happens if the user prints the Excel file to a PDF, then prints the PDF file? Any change? That actually worked, because now you're printing from the Adobe PDF. So it seemed like this was an office issue specific to Excel. This could function as a temporary solution for your client, like a Band-Aid, while you work on the solution. What he did was he asked someone else to print the document from XP, since this was a shared area. So that's how he got around the Excel crash instead of him printing it. But now with the Windows update that he applied, the Office update, that fixed the problem. But great recommendation, Andy. And I will have a link to the Yahoo Printer Support Group. This is from our friend Norbert Davis, who hosts Totally Cool Tech Podcast. Mike, listening to the voicemail problem that your listener had attempting to recover photos, cut and paste it from a digital camera, I came across the same conclusion that you had, that they are written over and are 100% gone. But I realized that the listener's friend seems to have an even larger problem. They are not tech savvy. They do not seem to know how to work with the settings of their digital camera to make the file names continue counting rather than reset each time. Now, if the camera is older and or so basic that the file name sequencing cannot be changed in the settings, then they have to do certain steps to not overwrite the files again. Here are two suggestions I have for the listener. One, teach the friend how to use their camera. At the least, set it up for them to where you prevent this from happening again as much as you can, or to where you only have to do a little work. Two, help set up your friend's computer so that his photos are organized. My suggestion would be to create folders on the target drive set up by year and month, and then either by key dates or special events. Here are a couple examples where he has D, photos, then the year, then the month, and then Rose Bowl game. Or D, the folder photos, 2011, 07 July, and then a directory, the 4th. Photos, 2011, 09, September, on and on and on. A directory structure that easily sets up organizing all of the photos. Matter of fact, I just did this for a client on Tuesday where he asked me, Mike, here's my digital camera and we need to get the photos. And I showed him how we're going to store the photos and make sure that this could not happen, which is overwriting the same photo names. Norbert continues, this is what my wife and I do to keep all of our photos organized. We typically just dump photos into the month folder and then make special event folders as necessary. Sometimes I create a temp folder, like when we went on vacation back east, with subfolders for transferring a lot of files from a card from different months, days, or events. This way, I can dump photo and video files from multiple cameras or cards onto one area, organize them, and then copy them where I want them to be permanently. From there, we can evaluate and delete those files we do not want. But if we trash one by mistake, we can go back to the temp file and attempt to recover the file. Now, you could transfer the temp folder to a DVD, CD, or even a backup hard drive. If you are that paranoid like me, for pack ratting purposes, and delete or empty the temp folder to save space. Now, this is just a suggestion, but one that works for me. Oh yeah, backup the photos folder on-site and off-site, because you never know what happens next. Norbert, great example. Thank you very much for that. And what Norbert lays out, which is to manage your photos, putting them into proper directories, and having a process that you always can go back to the original. I like that idea of having the folders where they're dumped to one area that then you maintain and move them to where you want and leave them in that area in case you need to go back to that. And after all your photos are set up the way you want into the proper folders, you've named them with the proper names, now you can go back and empty that temporary area that you created. I like that. Very, very good. I do everything that he says, except I don't have that temp area. I'm going to steal that idea. I like that. This is from Christian. Hello, Mike. To my knowledge, Hamachi isn't a traditional VPN. This is in response to last week's Hamachi question. Traffic flows between nodes on the Hamachi network, but only traffic to the Hamachi network 5.x.x.x. All other traffic continues to flow through your regular network. Hamachi is best used to make a virtual LAN of a number of computers to safely share resources or play LAN games over the internet. One caveat with Hamachi for me was that it interfered with my ability to use shared resources on computers in my domain. Connecting Hamachi meant problems with those resources until I restarted my computer. Not even closing Hamachi helped. If they've released something entirely new since I used it, I may be wrong. Thank you for that info on Hamachi. It's been a long time since I used Hamachi. And we're going to lead into the next question here, where I will answer what I do. Mike, how do you set up a VPN network? So far, I've been using Hotspot Shield. This is from BP. Hotspot Shield is a service. When I use a VPN, it's usually for a customer where I have inherited the setup, or I set up a new setup with a Juniper firewall and the Juniper client that came with it for establishing a VPN. And I did that for one client. I have two other clients using a SonicWall firewall, and they have the NetExtender client. So a lot of firewalls and VPN devices come with their own client. And that is the VPN that I have been using. Now, at home, I do not use a VPN. I use LogMeIn. When I need to get to something on my network, I LogMeIn into the computer. Now, if I want to, I use LogMeIn free. If I need a file, I will open up FileZilla. I will transfer the file to my server, and then I'll just go to my server from a web browser and I'll download it from wherever I'm at. So I don't use the file, I don't need the file transfer feature that you would need with a LogMeIn Pro account. That's the difference between LogMeIn Free and LogMeIn Pro. I use that remote access rather than setting up a VPN. So that's what I do. And now you know what I use for my clients, but my clients tend to be typically a little bigger and they need a little more professional VPN setup. So that's why I usually will use what they have installed for their firewall and then the client that comes with the firewall. Final email for the night. This is from Rich. I have been thinking of using a power line network to supplement my wireless network, but I'm not sure the best way to set it up. I live in a condo with my office at the opposite end from the living room where I use my laptop and have the Blu-ray DVD player set up. I recently switched from a G wireless router to an N router, but it doesn't help that much. In fact, there are several neighbors' routers with stronger signals than mine in my own apartment. The setup in the office is a cable modem plugged into an N router as the internet source. Also attached to the router is my desktop computer and network multifunction printer. I also used a Wi-Fi signal for my phone and a netbook that I use in other parts of the condo. I plan to attach a power line network adapter to the router, possibly a ZYXEL. In the living room, I would attach a power line adapter to my old G router and then connect the router to the Blu-ray player. I don't understand the Blu-ray player. We're going to figure this out. Oh, okay, now I understand. The Blu-ray player to get out to the internet. The G router would give me a stronger signal for my laptop, which is only G compatible in the living room. But I would still have the signal from the N router and other parts of the house. I don't know if that's going to work. Is there anything I need to do to be sure that the two wireless routers, yes, don't conflict with each other? Or any other steps I need to take to get this set up to work? Can I use the same SID and passwords? No. Thanks for the great show. What I recommend is definitely you need two different SIDs so they don't compete. What I recommend is ABC-G, ABC-N, something with a dash G and a dash N so you know which one you're connecting to. You can give them the same passwords. That makes it simple. Use WPA2 for your encryption. I have very little experience with power line networking. I will share I have one client where it was very difficult for Comcast to get a line to where he wanted the router versus where they were entering into the house. And they used power line networking to get from the destination in the basement to the house, up to his office. And it's working. I'm not sure the reliability. I know a lot of people love it and it works and it seems to be working well. You're going a short distance. You got to make sure you have the transmitter and the receiver set up. I'm going to use those terms for the power line networking. You should be good to go. Here's what I'm wondering. If you're going to use power line, why have the G at all? Why not just plug into the closest power adapter and you're actually going to get better performance than using wireless? Something to consider, as opposed to having two different wireless access points, only have the one, use power line to get from the one location in the condo to the other. Yeah, and it might be a better idea to just be able to use the Ethernet at that point. Just something else to consider. Make sure you are not giving out the same block of IP addresses. Make sure that each router, I would do this. I would only have the one N router give out IP addresses. Have the G be connected as an access point only, which means if you buy a router, you got to turn off the routing features. You don't plug anything into the WAN. Give the WAN a static dummy IP address. Give it a 10.10.something, a non-routable static IP address that does not conflict with the IP address subnet that the N router is giving out. Hope that makes sense. So you want to dummy down the G to not give out IP addresses, and you want to make it an access point, not a router. So keep that in mind. Turn off the routing features, and you won't have a conflict. Only have one giving out IP addresses. So this way, you've eliminated the possibility of duplicate IP addresses. Let me know how you make out with that, Rich. That's it for tonight's show. I hope you enjoyed it. We covered a whole lot here tonight, and I hope you had a good time. I hope you got something out of it somewhere along the way. Please stay subscribed to the show and continue to support the show using my Amazon link. Please don't forget that my consulting business, MHS Consulting, if you need help, and a couple of you have reached out, and I've been able to help you with some server issues, and I really appreciate that. I appreciate the business. If you are having problems with a server workstation where you need some professional help outside of just the Mike Tech Show, where you need my services, please contact me, mike@mhsconsulting.net, and I will get back to you. Send me contact information so I can call you. Send me a phone number and I will call you back. I also have phone numbers in the listed on the website. They're in the show notes every week. You have my phone number. You have a link with my email address. That's it. I will talk to you next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.